Okay, hello. Welcome to my talk. Great that some people, even more people, actually made it up here. Even weather is great outside and just beer somewhere. So we're talking about spec files and RPM. Who am I? I'm working for Red Hat for quite a while now. I started in 2006. After about 1 year, I started getting involved in YUM, which is the updater, the predecessor of DNF, basically the equivalent to Zipper. And after a year of optimizing it, I realized, well, I'm done here. If I want to do anything else, I need to go down one level. And so I get involved in RPM in around 2008 and have stuck there for some reason. That's actually my second visit to the OpenSUSEconf. I've been here before, but a lot of things have changed. Last time I've been here, it's been 2009, and it were very different times. And I've actually not really been in a conference. We've been hiding in some rooms and doing technical talk into how to merge the different patches that have been in OpenSUSE and in the Fedora tree at that point. So where are we in RPM-wise? We've done a few large changes and features, but it's been a while now. So it's like 2.5 years till we rolled them out. File triggers and Boolean dependencies were one of the biggest, especially file triggers are, at least in Fedora, a big thing because they've basically changed most of the scriptlets. So there's a huge amount of packages that have been changed. I've actually not looked into OpenSUSE, what's the state there of adoption, but maybe someone can enlighten us on this. So we currently have a huge backlog of mostly smaller features that we are going to release. The idea is to have an alpha release out next week, hopefully. But so over the next Fedora cycle, we want to get the release stabilized and then out. So traditionally, we've in RPM used Fedora as our test bench. So basically, we release in an early version of the next release and then stabilize throughout that. The thing is, we've been pretty busy with this RHEL 8 thing on the side. And so basically, after that's done, we're now thinking of what's the next big thing, what to do, where to go from here, and what is the most important thing to consider now. And the problem with RPM development is always that the RPM developers are developers, and they are not really packagers. Yeah, we do have a few packages that we have to take care of, but that's not the basic side thing. This has led to basically the last decade that most changes, even if they have huge impact for packaging, like the file triggers, are basically done from an RPM perspective and not from an RPM build perspective. So it's like, how do we want to have this installed on the system properly? And not so much what's the easiest for the packager to actually put it into something. So that's basically something we want to do next, and to basically look into specs, files, and packaging from a packager perspective, see what can be improved and what can be made easier. Another thing that's more probably not that interesting for you, but I had the data lying around, that's the growth of Fedora. I more or less assume that the data for OpenSUSE looks basically the same. The exact numbers are not that important. It starts here with 2004 and goes to basically now. And as you can see, it's basically a linear growth in number of packages and also in the number of in the overall size of the distribution. That means the number of work that has to be done each release gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger every time. And there's no sign of this slowing down or stopping at any point. So the only way around this is either to get more and more and more people involved, which is surely an option, but there's only so much you can do there. And the other option is to basically lower the amount of work needed for each update to be able to keep up with that. That's basically all what I said about this. So the question is, what can be removed from the package, or what steps can be removed from actually doing updates or creating new packages? What can be automated, and what can we remove from the manual work that's needed? So one big area has been scriptlets. That's kind of solved from an implementation point of view with file triggers. I don't know how far this works in OpenSUSE. Anyone an idea? Is this used? Are they used on a broader scale? Okay, so that's something worth looking into. Basically, replacing all the scriptlets in most files, in most packages, and centralize them. For those who don't know, that's basically the file triggers are basically you can run a script based on a file name that's in another package. It's possible that SUSE doesn't run that many scriptlets as we do, but that's not what I heard. Ah, there's an expert. So the idea is basically to do all the scriptlets in a centralized work and move them out of the packages, so the packages get simpler and the packages themselves don't have to care about it, but one central instance does all the work centrally. The next big thing that's going to be in the next release is automatic build dependencies. That comes from the Rust and Go folks. The problem here is that when many of those new languages do have their own package format, and they do have all those metadata already, like dependencies on what other packages they depend, and it's a pain to synchronize that right now. So there are tools that can read some other Rust or Go package description and turn it into a spec file, but it's not, that's great as a starting point, but it's not something that's very helpful on an for distribution that does updates, because you don't want to overwrite your spec file. You want to keep that and want to keep your history and your patches and everything. You don't want to copy over stuff that gets generated elsewhere all the time. The automatic build dependencies will solve this to some extent. It's basically a build scriptlet that is run after prep and will generate dependencies for the build. That's going to be interesting for the OBS people that probably still sit down there not suspecting anything. as it breaks a lot of assumptions of the build, which we have. Right now, the assumption is you can just build a source RPM without anything, basically with RPM only. And you can then start a build with the dependencies in there and being guaranteed that it's going to succeed because if you have all the dependencies installed. That's going to break, but it's not as bad as I first thought, so you basically have to do another round, read in the new dependencies, and restart the build. It's going to be okay, I promise. Maybe. So another thing that's kind of RPM-ish, but not really, that's probably more Fedora specific, and we have to see how that translate to other distributions, is I want to get some stuff out of the spec file, and using the Git repositories, we have the spec files in as data store. I'll elaborate on that, it's a bit more complicated. And for the long-term things, what we want to do is having templates within the spec files that can be maintained centrally. So you can have you can remove some of the boilerplate stuff and have it in a central location that does things. There are basically two directions to these. One is this is something to have templates for building. So you have for different languages prepared build templates that you can use. That's still very vague in my mind. The question here is what can be centralized, how many configuration do you need, and what can actually be saved in complexity, or if you need so many knobs that it's not worth doing. But we'll look into this in more detail. And another thing is building sub-packages is currently kind of a pain. The thing that's currently most complicated is debug info packages. and it's solved currently by some code somewhere in RPM that basically does them in C code, which is not that beautiful. But there are a lot of other use cases where right now those sub-packages have to be done by hand. But I will also go into details soon. So what we currently have, if you do an update, you have to create a patch somehow. You have to add it to the spec file. You have to pick a patch number, find out which is the next suitable. Then you have to apply that in prep using the number above. You have to increase the release. You have to add a changelog entry. You have to use the number, the release number you just increased from above. You have to add your name and email. Then you have to commit this. I don't know what you do in SUSE. Where do you store your spec files? Do you have
integrated VCS in the build service?
Okay, so you put them somewhere else. But if, so
we have a macro, so we don't need to remember the patch number in prep.
Yeah.
That one mod that does the patches. So do we. Everybody does. It's auto setup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Auto setup or auto patch.
Yeah. So we could put it in Git, and typically you'd even have to put a changelog, have to copy the changelog message, or you have something in Git also. So it's a lot of steps. Yeah, we already removed this step here with auto setup. The next release will allow you to not set a number, so we will auto number the patches, which makes sense if you use auto setup, because who cares what number the patch has. This is more interesting for us because we have different branches for different releases, so we might want to cherry pick stuff from one branch to another, and this is a total nightmare because there's nothing in here that doesn't give a conflict. literally. I will try to look if we can get rid of the changelog by basically generating that from the Git backlog, and probably also calculate the release number from the Git by just counting up. So that will reduce the number of things that can go wrong or be wrong. It also will basically remove all those things that create merge conflicts for us, because you basically just put in the patch adds one line up here, and if it's a conflict, that's not that bad. It's just the one line somewhere in the right moment that might be in the wrong order. Who cares? You put it in there, and then the commit message stays the same, and it just does everything else. That's something I want to look in Fedora. That will probably take a while till it gets to the point where it's interesting for you guys. But this will probably be some kind of white paper how to do that or what can be done there.
Well, in SUSE, the release number is completely controlled by the build service, and the changelog is generated from an external file and then overwritten completely during the build as well.
So I will probably have a look at that.
Moreover, even with the external file, we're still copying the OBS VCO, so it's still in two places. So they have the same problem anyway.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's pre-given. So you commit, and you get the whole text already pasted into it.
Yeah, or you could commit without having to change the file and have those entries in there and pull it from there.
Mm. Depends.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but
there's a lot of history to the whole process.
Yes. Will you make this work on the distance?
On?
I would at distance.
Well, the stuff that is in our, that we do within RPM will of course be upstream RPM. The other stuff, the problem is that's all basically build system or logic. So it depends on the integration in the build system or the way you store your spec file. So that's yeah, the auto setup stuff is done already, and the patch number stuff is going to be the next release. So that's more or less that's done. We just have to release it.
If you want to make it work, that you can have it also for like your different branches, you need to backport it to Fedora 29, 28, 27.
Yeah, we will see how.
It'll happen. He doesn't like thinking about it.
The thing is, you're probably.
Igor will make it happen.
But so first, no, I don't say anything about what we're doing. Well, But we can talk about Fedora, and we've so far been hesitant backporting too many stuff back. We'll see. But that's a topic for another rainy day. That's basically what we're trying to do here. Then dynamic build dependency, I already said that. There will be a new section that will be run after prep. The main thing is that it will require build system integration. You will be able to do that in also on the command line, of course. So you have to expect that your build might fail on missing build dependencies, even though you already installed all of them that you had in your source appair. So that's basically a main change that is in there. The other thing is, as a packager, you can probably outsource generating the build dependencies from your package, and it will be that's one section less that can go wrong if the packages change. I assume there will be tools for the typical candidates like Rust. Igor is working on that. He's hiding in the background. And
brought the Rust to the open
source
as well.
Yeah, so that's on your doorstep. and I hear the Go people are also interested in using this. The thing is, that's how it's going to start. I can imagine that on the long term, even classical packages may be using this. I mean, it's not that great if you want to get the requirements out of a configure file, but CMake maybe. Maybe one can even convince upstream to basically ship a machine-readable file of dependencies at some point if we downstream are able to actually process that and make something useful with it. So I see there's more thing that is more impact that this can have in the long term, but it will probably take a while until all the tooling gets in place and it actually gets adopted. So another thing when we're looking on the packages, when I've been thinking about packages, is there is a weird conflict about who's actually controlling what in the RPM land. So there's, of course, things that are RPM upstream that we do, and then they are implemented and everyone else has to follow, because if we change something, yeah, we changed it. Then there is, of course, the packager, which has most control over the package itself, and there's a very weird in-between layer of the distribution that has very little control right now. And so it's very difficult to actually centralize stuff out of the packages and bring that in a place where people think about a bigger picture. So we've tried to do that with the file triggers to be able to get the scriptlets to a central place. But I think in the long term, we need to think about more, if there are more places where we can centralize things. And currently, that's really difficult because there's no implementation level. So there's, in OpenSUSE, but in Fedora, we have huge amounts of packaging guidelines, pages over pages over pages over pages, how things are to be done, how they to be named, how they should look like, what you can't and couldn't do, what you shouldn't do, what you might do if you ask someone, or what else. The worst thing about all those guidelines is, yeah, there's a package review, but if your package is in, no one cares. So there are all those rules that may or may not be followed, and there's no way to actually put them into the world as an entity on their own. And so I hope that there we can find ways to, for one, help the packager doing the right thing, and on the other hand, giving the distribution or parts of the distributions more control over a set of packages of their interest. I first thought if we can do something on a distribution level, but I think that's not possible. The reason why there's so much control on the packager level is because the packages are so different. And that's one of the reasons why RPM is so hard and so complicated, because we have to cover basically every possible situation that might be somewhere. And there's no way to like fit them all under one solution. But there are a lot of packages that look a lot the same. All the Python packages, or all the font packages, or all the language packages. And so there are a lot of packages that belong together, either by the way they are built, or they are, what they contain, or how they are related to. And so I think we need to focus, if we can find solutions and that allow those packages to be maintained in a more controlled way, with a more centralized approach. But that's going to be tricky, because those structures don't really exist, because there's no point in me like having a script saying, well, that's what Python packages should look like. You need basically a group within a distribution that actually takes care of this. This extends to RPM to some extent, that we also have a lot of the tools that we already have upstream are things that we don't really maintain well, because we don't know and we don't care really. So there are all kinds of those dependency generators for different languages, and I'm fine. I know Python. I can look at a Python dependency generator and make some sense of it. Then there is a Go dependency generator, and I have no idea how that's even supposed to work. And there are all these other languages. And so we've tried the last year or two, but not succeeded much, basically push them out and basically hand them over as a separate project that are maintained by different people that actually care about how those packages look like. So I invite everyone, if you're taking care of some of those groups of larger packages, talk to us if you want to get involved, so we can basically hand those adjacent areas over to people that actually care, because RPM upstream can't really get involved into all those ever-growing number of package families that have special needs and need special care. And one of the things that we want to look into perform and feature-wise is how to make this easier, and how to offer solutions to those groups that can be actually done. Yeah, you can write macros in RPM, but that's all kind of ugly right now. So a lot of things can be done if you really want to, but you run into issues very quickly. So if you want to ship those macros as separate files and automatically set dependencies on those stuff. So there's probably a lot of smaller feature that we will look into over the next year to see if we can make this easier. And one of the goals is to centralize those boilerplate code. It's not that interesting, but at least get it done. I've looked at eBuild, which does something very similar to this. Interest groups we need to get in contact with. And the idea is, of course, to this will be of course optional, so we are not going to remove the other stuff. But that means, on the other hand, packages actually will need to be moved more or less by hand or by script to those new options. One way this could solve is if you put those scripts or templates into separate versions for different releases, you could get rid of all those if lines that litter a lot of our packages. And I hear that's even worse in OpenSUSE. Not pointing fingers, but if you have centralized scripts that are used there, you can have different versions for different releases that does do the right thing without the package even knowing the difference, hopefully. The other thing is dealing with sub-packages. That's currently the problem with this, with sub-packages in RPM right now is the overall attitude that RPM has in spec files. The spec file right now basically is a consistency check for the software it packages. So you have the file list, and the file list is there to type in every file, so to make sure that if there some file pops up that doesn't belong there, it gets an error. It creates an error, and you, as a packager, are supposed to look up what went wrong and fix that, or fix the list or whatever. And the same thing is also true for sub-packages. So as soon as something goes wrong there, you will get an error, and the package will not build. And I think we might be able to basically just loosen those rules, or be able to loosen those rules basically by a switch, to be able to have template packages that will build if everything is right. So you can basically have a devil template that will be used, and it will swallow all those files that look the right way, so all the include files, we will just move there if there are some. And the behavior will be if there are no files to be included because it's not a C package but some documentation package, those packages will just not be built without generating an error. So you have those templates you can use, and it will fail graciously and not bother you. I have some ideas how to do that, but it's still brewing in my mind how to do this in detail. In the end, it's a question of philosophy, how much convenience you want for the packager and how much control you want to bind down how the package actually should work. There is the possibility, of course, to use the build templates from above to actually include those templates, so you could have so that even those sub-packages get basically generated automatically, and you could have like distribution level includes that would determine what level of sub-packages are actually built for those packages that are using this. So you could say, well, we want all the all the non-binary files split out in a separate package. So we would only have the binary stuff in the lib package, and everything else gets a lib no source RPM or something like this. Or you would be able to split out all language files and basically explode every application into like 50 language sub-packages. And you could switch this on and off basically without even touching the package. So that's basically, yeah. Well, one interesting thing is what to do with files, and there is a couple of mechanisms that we would need there, like some sub-package stealing files from another, the problem is right now files are more or less taken care of very carefully, but if you want to enable switch on and sub-package, you of course have to move the files over there without generating an error in the other package that may list them still. So there's a couple of, so we will need some syntax that will allow to do that without generating errors. And we will also need something to basically append packages. That's something that's currently not possible. So you cannot have like a second file list to add files to a package that may be coming from a template. So if you have a devil package, you might have those other files you want in there too, so you will add something like this. So that's the things I'm thinking about at night. Questions, comments, scared faces. I do have RPM merch for the best comments. Yeah, please.
My main gripe is always when we introduce new macros or new features in Xamarin. for us, it's very easy to have backport packages. And I really hate that we then have to do if conditionals in the spec file to. So that's why I was asking if you can make it that we can easily backport those features. So backporting, like rebuilding RPMs on your older distros still works fine.
Yes, the question was about backporting and how to make it easier to make those new features and new macros to actually work on older releases that are built from the same spec file and to avoid all the release version something. So in Fedora avoids this to some degree by having actually different Git branches, so they're not building from the same file, but they're not everyone is willing to split up the spec file into actually different versions, so we basically get the same thing. Backporting features is kind of difficult. There's basically, there's no magic here. There are two ways to do that. Either you update RPM in the old version. That's something a lot of people feel very uncomfortable with. And the other thing is basically backporting the single patches, which is something we have done, but we are trying to avoid because it's, of course, a lot of work and may break stuff anyway. But there's no real solution for this. The real solution is not to have too many different versions. Or the other thing, what we've actually done in the past is delay the usage of those features for a release or two. So you basically drain out the old RPM versions that can't support it and only use it later on.
So they've been waiting 15 years.
Yeah, they've been waiting 15 years. The thing is we've done that in the past,
yeah.
but not for this reason.
Successfully broken that
because
that made life really, really hard.
Yeah. We can't no longer do that. So we're trying to keep up and be faster, and that's a good thing. But it balances out. So being slow sometimes has benefits. Being fast sometimes has benefits faster.
At least from the macros perspective, one of the things that we did for Fedora was if they're just macros that run in the macro engine, we just yoinked them and put them into another package and then just force them into the build room for all the older releases. So that works for us for like 90% of feature backports. When it comes to like they change the way RPM build works, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah, so.
That's why I was wondering, you said, oh yeah, then you don't have numbers anymore in the patch lines and they don't cause conflicts anymore, but.
Yeah, but that's something that can be done on outside of RPM, so you don't actually. Yeah, the missing numbers, not really.
You have a pre-process step that adds another
effect. Yeah, that would be a possibility. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. A comment for me, this looks a lot of magic. It scares me.
Yeah.
Because
so
for me,
this program.
Yeah.
Why are you scared of this?
Yeah, for me, explicit is better than implicit. So for example, my question is, you have generate build requests. Bring it offline, like we have tools like Cipan spec, which figures out build requests for you. But what value does it bring to do with a macro and not bring it beforehand, before committing? I mean, once you see a macro, the other I see the build request for me, as a reviewer, I read thousands of spec files, it's easy to see the difference, for example. You might introduce a new build request and I might not know it.
Well, the main reason. So the question was: this looks like a lot of magic, and why not generate the build requires previously in another step? And one of the reasons is that we first you need the infrastructure to do the another step. The second thing is those new languages basically, yeah, you could do it previously, but it's kind of part of the build process, actually. So they come prepackaged with the information inside, and basically using this during the build process makes it harder for this to actually go wrong or break.
Yeah.
So it's basically, you could do it outside, but you need to have all the stuff wrapped around. If you do it in the package, you can actually have the process of extracting those dependencies as part of the package. Yeah, RPM is all a tooling problem.
No, I mean, we have stuff that runs before you commit, which basically can be wrapped to generate user requests, but then I see the explicit build requests.
So, no, technically stops it from making it so that at part of an OBS review that the generated build requirements.nosource is actually captured, recorded, and put into the reviewer field.
So we are not hiding them.
But I agree, on the other hand, scriptlets thingy, like every spec file calling LD config is just stupid. You can just figure out it's a library, you have to call it, which will simplify spec files a lot and other stuff, etc. I agree.
So this is a comment to that.
Yeah. More follow-up question. How do you do it in Koji? Like, we set up a new build environment for every build. So
yes.
We need to know upfront what we need to install into that. How do you do it in Koji? Do you want to then run the Rust extract tool on your Koji resolving thingy that creates a build job that then...
So Koji does it by we take from this git, we create a source package. Source package gets passed to mock. Mock runs DNF build dep, which extracts those, installs those build deps, then runs RPM build against that. RPM build bombs out with another source package, which then runs DNF build dep against that, creates a new chroot that runs the build a second time, and then runs through that, and then that's the final build.
Oh my god.
Except
for
the
top,
there is only one source package.
Well, at the end of there'll be a final source package, but there's an intermediary no source package that's created as part of this thing.
So the thing is, it's actually... The way it's implemented in RPM, it's actually meant to restart the build. And you can actually restart the build even from the extracted prep, from the extracted sources, if you want to. So the turnaround in there is very small if you do it properly. So it basically just creates a header with the dependencies in it, and you basically install those into the existing build root and then restart the build. That's all you need to do. Hmm? You need to lock. You need to.
You copy the RPMs in, then start the VM, and the VM only gets the RPMs that it has pre-resolved. So
there's no external interaction.
Yeah.
None.
There's no secondary resolution process at all.
Yeah, that will be interesting.
I know.
So I've been talking to Michael Schroeder, and he said,
we know the dependency before.
I know.
That's
the A1
of build service.
I know. It's going to be fun to watch.
We will see that. I've been talking to Michael Schroeder, and he said he thinks he can do it somehow. But
Michael's also a god.
Yeah, so who am I to question him?
On a good day, but a bad day is the devil.
Yeah. I'm not repeating that.
Sometimes I need to make a package for them that package can be deployed on their system. So can you describe the proper way how to package a Java simple application? What would be the case?
There's no such thing as
Java. There's a very simple answer, and the answer is no.
I need to specify what kind of virtual machine.
Yeah, we have people that do Java packaging. That they are not me.
Is there any in the documentation for the Red Hat Enterprise Linux?
docs.fedoraproject.org. There's a packaging guidelines page. The Java stuff applies to all Red Hat family distributions.
Okay.
Yeah, as we say, we have a lot of packaging guidelines.
Yeah.
The problem is probably not that there are too little guidelines. The problem is rather than there are too many.
They mostly
like, I was just going to say, I was talking to my manager, he said we are now using
file triggers in all sorts of places.
Mm-hmm. Just not for libraries.
And yeah. Because we maintain much of the base system, that means everyone else can see the images.
Okay. Thank you.
We are not there yet.
Hopefully it won't take 3 years of arguments because you see people.
What does it have for us?
So, any other questions?
Maybe a bit out of the box. I don't remember the name of the guys, but years back there was this group of former RVM developers that built a package manager that used Python inheritance, so you could have base package Python extended by, I think...
Oh, Connery people.
Connery, right, exactly.
RPAP.
That was the package manager. I like that concept because basically you'd only have to describe the changes between boilerplate and what the kind of thing is doing. I know RPM is miles away from that, but I like the thinking, and maybe one could do some really hacky things like, I don't know, using Jinja within a spec file or so to simulate some of that.
You're getting very close to some of the things that other people have been doing right now.
So I've not yet looked at Connery, but that's clearly something I will look into. Can someone...
I'm just existing, I think CA bought them
all
company.
You got all the code is still available on GitHub.
Yeah.
Yeah, so can someone... I'm kind of...
I'll give it to
him. I'm kind of chained here.
Yeah,
okay. Okay. Any other questions, remarks?
A very, very stupid one. Why does RPM
That's a good question, and that's easy to answer, because there are no comments in RPM.
Oh God, that's not a good answer.
Yeah, no, that's the actual answer. The thing is, if you have a hash, that's a comment within a shell that's part of the shell thing, and RPM is completely oblivious of the fact that you thought you would commenting something out. That's something we actually looked into like a half a year ago, and I don't know if we did something about it, but it's something. I think we added a warning for that. I'm not one.
Lena added an error to Git Master, so that if it's a multi-line macro that is on a comment line, it will blow up instead of letting you go.
Yeah, over. Something like this.
But that's a Git Master, which means it'll be coming out sometime in the far future.
No. We're doing an alpha release next week.
Wait, what? Wait, you're going to actually do a release?
Yeah, that's a plan.
Or just get Michael Schroeder to put that patch in.
Yeah,
that
too.
But then when do we get parts of it? Play around with. I have some fun packages which involve because of macro resolution and...
So the plan is to do an alpha release next week and refine that through the next Fedora release cycle, which ends in October or something, November, I think.
Yeah, the Penin just sent out the change proposal for RPM 4.15.
So you're feel free to grab the alpha release as soon as it's out. Maybe wait a week or two before you push it. Yeah, but of course, yeah, feel free, play around with it. We will... Typically, Fedora takes most of the heat of getting the really fresh stuff, but there's really no reason why other people shouldn't try and feel a bit of the pain.
Yeah, but 75 patches on RPM makes it very hard to test new versions.
Yeah, but even if you don't put it into the distribution right away, you can play around with it.
Like, that's because of macro resolution, and if you have four variables that get expanded, it runs in a stack error.
Can you just open a ticket with some test case? Because the macro engine, we have Pavlina, which has looked into the macro engine. I, for years, have basically refused to even look at it because it's scary on the outside and maybe it's scary on the inside. How would I know? But So yeah, there's probably still stuff that can be fixed, even if it's code that's 20 years old.
When can we get Elon?
I will probably just. I will probably just merge it as soon as I get back from the conference.
Thank God.
It's an epic over like years and yeah. Don't get me started. Okay, any other questions? I think we're done here. Thank you.